Yes, but they kept up with technology. I mean, the machinery, they got new machines in, they got... It was a very well-run mills, so I can't understand what went wrong.
It was not well-run. It was extremely badly run. Eventually, we had to bring in a new group managing director because Bert Cusack was the guy running it. Okay, now technically he was excellent, and he did keep investing in machinery. But when we got a new group managing director in the form of Henry Lund, okay, came in. Henry sent me around Europe to make comparisons between the efficiency of Clondalkin and the efficiency of the mills in Scandinavia, and the whole thing was a joke. I think Clondalkin, again, you have to check this because you've got the figure. I think Clondalkin at one stage were employing something like 800 to produce maybe, again, you'll have to check this, but 30, 40, maybe 60,000 tons, I can't remember. But I remember being in a mill in Finland.
Yes.
And they were doing the same with about 300.
Oh, yes. So
Technically, they were fine, and their bleach craft was a fine sheet of paper. There's no question about that.
So what did you do about that then?
Well, the thing is that they began to lose money because they couldn't compete internationally. They had to compete internationally. Le Mas had opened up Ireland to foreign competition. You couldn't go to markets and at the same time have protection. So he was bringing down protection all the time. Clondalkin found themselves wildly uncompetitive.
Yeah.
You had mills in Scandinavia doing nothing else but producing bleach craft from one end of the year to the other. Mm-hmm. And Clondalkin, again, we're like ourselves. They're doing bits of this and bits of that and bits of the other. And there's no way they could compete. Absolutely no way. Now, I could tell you stories aligned with that which would frighten you. It was known, like, fellows would disappear with forklift trucks up to their home and do a bit of work at home and come back with the forklift truck in the afternoon and all this sort of stuff. There were too many people there. It was massively inefficient. Yeah. And Henry is the guy doing this, but I was with him most of the time. We looked at this, and Henry put up three scenarios on the board. One, keep the mill open, and the whole group would close. Okay. Now, he had loads of figures to show this. The middle one, keep the mill open and invest, and they would take every penny that we would generate for the following 10 or 20 years, the mill alone, right? Now, Henry wanted to expand. He wanted to develop the group or close it. And obviously, in the closure of it, it would take a certain amount of money to pay off people, but then at least we would be fresh and we'd have our own cash flow and we'd be able to expand abroad.
Okay.
And that was his vision.
Yes.
Not as fast as Michael Smurfit. He didn't have that kind of concept of moving terribly fast, but he wanted to move. So, as executives, we made the decision to close it. But when it went to the board, everybody had a canary. Oh! I mean, this was unheard of.
Yeah.
And politically.
Okay.
Now, you'll have to check this, Morris, because there was a series of general elections around 70-something or other. Gareth Fitzgerald was in the middle of it, so that would have been Hottie's time and all these guys. And they used to come into the mill in a bus because there were 800 votes. It was big in West County Dublin, in the whole constituency. They were looking at 800 votes. They used to come into the mill in a bus, the politician. So you have, now you've got to check all this because it gets very nasty. We went down that road and there were meetings. And the politicians came to the meetings because now it was a huge political thing. We were closing 800 jobs. And 800 jobs to this day is huge in Ireland.
Of course.
Those days it was massive.
Yes. Like, well, it was a whole area.
It was a whole area were going to be affected. Yeah. And Mary Harney came to the meetings. She was West. That was her constituency.
Of course it was, yeah.
I'm not too sure about this. I'm getting worried.
But
anyway, eventually.
But politics were wrapped up in this as
huge,
well.
Yeah.
The government put money into it as well, didn't they? I mean,
absolutely.
Dick Spring put €1 million.
But whatever.
You can
check all that.
Yeah.
But Bert had a plan, you see. His plan was option number one, to keep the mill going and invest. And I mean, the figures were mind-boggling at the time. They were talking about, he was talking about kind of to get the mill up and competing internationally was something like 100 million. You've no idea what 100 million is today. You're talking billions. You can imagine. It was ridiculous. The whole thing was crazy. Anyway, we went down this other road and, oh, it was scarifying. It was in the newspapers all the time. But eventually, now you have to remember, in fairness to the board of directors, J.J. O'Toole from Limerick, I don't know whether it was himself or his dad had invested. Ferguson, as far as I can remember, was sort of out in the troubles. Mm. He died at the age of 90. He'd shops up in Rathmines. The McCulloughs were in it. Now, the McCulloughs were...
Dennis McCulloughs?
Yes, they were all...
Yeah.
I'm worried about this. They were all IRB and God knows what. Like, in the troubles.
Well, they were, yes. I've spoken to Dennis.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, Adam Henry Gibson would have been a total outsider to this. Like, he was a Protestant Methodist. And he went to service up in Rathcar, and which is still there. And Sydney and Cecil went there. It was chaotic. It was really chaotic. Oh, Mrs. McArdle Murphy was from Dundalk. Now, they were big people in the Troubles, you know, and they were big retailers. Politically, it was terribly sensitive. It really was very sensitive. So. But there was no point keeping it open. I mean, as an executive, it was ruinous to keep it open.
Well, obviously, you'd know more this more than anyone, being coming from an accountancy background. Yeah, yeah. So you saw the figures. Yeah. And you came back from Europe, and you.
Oh yeah, well, I came back.
It
got worse than that.
At those meetings, they were obviously very hot. People wanted to keep it open. Very they hot. Had lots of investments.
Is that on or off?
It is on now.
Okay.
They had lots of investments in it. So,
they would have had
investments. So talk me through it. What happened?
Well, with enormous difficulty, Henry got it accepted that there was no future for the mill. And I mean, when I say enormous difficulty, I mean meetings on Wednesday that would go on from 4 to 8, 8:30, 9, meetings on Saturday morning. Now, you have to see what he was trying to do. Here was a group of companies which were making profits, all of which had been dragged down by the mill. They were milking everything. And when you made profit... I know you're not an accountant, but essentially Henry was interested in cash flow. Now, cash flow is profit plus depreciation and things that don't require cash going out. Mm. And all that cash was going into the mill. All of it. So there was just no future for anybody or anything if this went on. So these meetings would go on, and they, as you say, would become terribly political, i.e. you cannot do that. The government will this, the government will that, the government will the other. And the government actually bought it. Eventually.
Mm. Yes.
Have you discovered that?
I have, yes.
Yeah,
don't go there yet.
Okay.
The unions came in.
Yeah, then the Saturday morning meetings were with the unions. And there was one fellow called Bulger, and he used to arrive with strike notice every week. Every week. And we're going on strike. And of course, the strike would have played into our hands, but the other trade union guys realised that. I mean, if you go on strike, but then that's it. That is real closure. But now you're closing it. We're not closing it, you know? So that would have gone on for months and months and months. And eventually, a line had to be drawn. And Henry was, at that, he was terrific. Mm. He was great. I mean, he had decided if the group and all the people in it, which was very important, there were hundreds of people outside of the mill as well, if there was to be a future for them, for himself probably, the mill had to go.
Yeah.
So eventually he sold it. Now, you'll have to look into what happened after, because it went to all sorts of extraordinary people. Became
Canadians
got involved? Yeah, Canadians got involved. That's right, yeah. Well, now you see, we were gone then.
Okay. Did Michael Spurford actually... was he there at any stage?
No.
Did he want to take it over?
Oh, no interest in the mill.
Did he not?
Oh, no, not really.
At any stage?
At any stage. He'd a mill to make a very rough kind of paper up in Clonskee.
Yes.
Which, the actual building is still there. You can see it.
Yes.
I think it's closed. But that was just a very, very liner that went into the corrugated boxes.
Okay.
So he had his own problems.
Yeah.
There was actually no place for a paper mill in Ireland. Just no place. I mean, the Scandinavians are so...
But what about Swiftbrook? I mean, they were very fine quality.
Yeah, well, I ran Swiftbrook.
You ran Spittal?
Well, now it had closed as a mill. Horsburgh, was it?
Yeah.
And I've, funnily enough, and later in my life, I've come across connections of his. Anyway, that's all. Different story.
But you actually took over Swiftbrook.
Yeah, well, Swiftbrook became part of Clondalkin before we got involved. Or in or about the same time.
Yes.
They were totally inefficient as well. You see, it was the change. It was the big, big change. They were making paper in a very old-fashioned way, not quite by hand, but, you know, very labour-intensive. And it's beautiful paper, but nobody wants to pay the money. You just can't afford that kind of paper.
But there must have been a market for it. I mean, really, this vellum that they
know,
were producing.
The market
was big. Yes, but there must have been a niche there somewhere for that.
There would be now.
Investigated.
And there would have been through the boom when everybody wanted personalised paper and all the rest. Yeah. But at a stage like Ireland was. Well, I mean, you're not that young, Morris. Ireland was just about struggling out of its cocoon of depression and the 50s and all the rest of it. You know, we were just beginning to put one little step forward that, like, maybe we could do things. But the question was, what could we do? And certainly making paper wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
Now, there were several mills at a certain time, but that's when Europe was all closed, you know, and right up through the war when you needed paper and you needed these things. Mm. Otherwise, you'd have nothing.
So did you have to make real hard decisions?
Oh, yeah, terrible decisions, and affecting people very badly. Yeah, very badly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what kind of decisions did you make?
Well, it's closing, putting people out in the street.
Yeah.
You know, is never an easy thing. Do you know? It's extremely difficult. And it doesn't bother me to this day, because I do think that eventually we gave jobs and kept families in education and food and everything else for years after, generations after. Whereas if we'd kept the mill open, would have closed the whole place.
Yeah.
It would have closed Bailey Gibson, would have closed Guy, would have closed everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, because...
Well, why did Dr. Cusick retire so early from the...
Well, he didn't. I think he was of an age. I mean, he stayed around for yonks after it. Essentially, if you wanted to expand, he was not the man, do you know?
Yeah.
He was an engineer, he was a very good papermaker. He had actually no conception of how to run a group. He had no idea, absolutely no idea. As far as he was concerned, the mill was the only thing that was important. The rest were irrelevant, really. Just passes up whatever money you've got.
Okay.
And but he did, in fairness to him, decide to bring in Henry Lund. Now, Henry Lund is the son of Anker Lund, who came over with a fellow called Larsen from Denmark and set up Cement Roadstone.
Okay.
And he's the son. And he was in Holland, and I don't know how Bert met him. Oh, he knew Anker Lund in the Confederation of Irish Industries. And he got Henry in.
And he thought he was the man for the job.
He was. Yeah. Henry was very good.
Yes.
He was terrific. He was a great pal of mine.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, great pal of mine. I was delighted to see him coming in.
Why?
Bert was...
Just not the same.
No, he wasn't nice. He was... I wouldn't like to say he was a nasty bit of goods, but he had problems. Bert had terrible problems.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if you look at his history, any guy who came close to him or threatened to get close to him, somehow or another, left.
Yeah.
Now, Des Tannum would be a name you might...
Oh, yeah. I spoke to Des.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but I don't know
but
what Des
did. Des left because he wanted... You know,
He wanted change.
Yes,
Paul McKee was deputy group managing director at one stage and was hung out to dry, politically very nastily. Now, Paul wouldn't have told you that, but I can
tell you. That's what happened.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Des couldn't wait to get away from Bert. He had problems. I took an attitude to Bert very early on.
Yeah.
Keep away from him. He's dangerous. Don't get too close to him. He's
imagine that.
Yeah.